Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Thank you for being with us. We just got done speaking with the president and CEO of the St. Louis Area Food Bank. Your personal invitation from me to you to come see us tomorrow between noon and 3 at the St. Charles Ruler Foods as we do our annual Christmas food drive. Would love to see you. We'll talk more about that in a minute. I want to get to our guest. Very excited to have Andy McCarthy back on the show with us, a contributing editor at National Review, host of the McCarthy Report, and a Fox News contributor. Andy, welcome back. It's great to have you here.
Annie, great to be with you.
Thank you so much. I wanted to get your thoughts on the Daniel Penny trial. We've been covering the news as it's been developed, as are all those news organizations out there watching to see what happens. But a jury that couldn't agree on the first charge and a not guilty verdict on the criminal negligence. What do you make of the Daniel Penny trial in New York City?
Well, I've never been happier to be wrong. And I certainly was, in the sense that on Friday, as you mentioned, it looked like the jury couldn't agree on the more serious count, which was the manslaughter count. Manslaughter is basically reckless homicide. And the other count was a negligence charge, criminally negligent homicide. So obviously, I thought if you had jurors who were at least one, maybe more, who were looking to convict Penny on the more severe charge, it was unlikely that they would acquit him on the lesser charge. But happily, I think what happened is after 4 days of deliberation, the shenanigans that the district attorney pulled at the end where, you know, after an 8-week trial telling the jury all of a sudden that the charge that the case has been centrally about is out of the case now and not to worry about it anymore, never mind after 4 days and 30 hours of deliberation, and then to make them come back on Monday to start all over again on another count, I think they were probably pretty steamed about that and saw through the ruse, and it took less than an hour for them to acquit on Monday. So I thought the best result Penny could get was likely to be a hung jury. So to see him get acquitted, as it happens on both charges, is great.
Yeah, I think that the way that this trial initially kind of paralleled the election with the developments that were taking place, and of course the country's focus squarely centered on Donald Trump and Kamala Harris through the beginning of November, I was worried that it wouldn't get the national attention that it deserved. What do you think about Daniel Penny's trial, the fact that it was brought to begin with? It feels reflective of a society or maybe a justice system that is confused, at least from my layman's perspective, on who victims are and who criminals are and who the do-gooders are of the world.
Yeah, look, you're right about that. I grew up in New York City and I was a prosecutor, a federal prosecutor, not a state prosecutor like the guys who brought this case, but I was a federal prosecutor in Manhattan for many years. And when you're making decisions about exercising prosecutorial discretion, which prosecutors do in every case, right? Because we're in our country, you're not required to file criminal charges just because you're aware of criminal evidence. Prosecutors always have the discretion whether to bring the case or not. And that usually is a weighing of the public interest in going forward with the case versus other public interests. Here, not only was this a weak case, we're dealing with somebody who had a profound justification defense and who conducted himself heroically. But You know, in New York, you have about 9 million people and fewer than 34,000 police. So normally, you know, when there's police presence, people don't commit crimes. But obviously, when you have so many people and so few cops, most, the vast majority of crimes that get committed, including violent crimes, are not going to be witnessed by police. Police are not going to be on the scene to provide assistance to people. And if valorous people who are capable don't come forward or feel like they're going to get in more trouble than it's worth to intervene when vulnerable people are under a threat or worse, are being attacked violently, the city becomes unlivable. It becomes very unsafe, because if those people can't come forward and the police aren't there, then that means the criminal element runs the streets. And I don't think, as a prosecutor, that's acceptable.
Yeah. We're speaking with Andy McCarthy, Fox News contributor, a fellow at National Review Institute. I think about, you know, if you're going to have a civilized society, those societal expectations have to have a pretty clear view on what is right and wrong. And there's always some gray area there, or context that makes it a little more complicated than the black and white of it. But when I think Americans, and I assume those people living in Manhattan, look at what Alvin Bragg's attention is focused on. When we see in the wake of the UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson's murder, I mean, I don't know what this suspect, I don't understand how this is unfolding right now. But what I see surrounding this story is people who are forgetting that Brian Thompson is a father, is a human being, and he was gunned down. And somehow or another, it's kind of just like a passing detail in a larger conversation about something that they used to justify this horrendous murder. It just seems like, for somebody like you who's invested in prosecuting crime and understanding the rule of law, which establishes and maintains order in a society, everything seems to be a little bit upside down right now.
Yeah, it does. And I have to say, you know, in every case I ever prosecuted, I would always try to get into the head of the person that you're prosecuting, in part because the burden of the state or the federal government in a criminal case is to prove mens rea, to prove intent, to prove what the person's state of mind is, and also to give a an accurate description to a jury of what happened. I always felt like you need to understand what happened before you can relate it to anyone else. So it's not strange to me that people go through the exercise of trying to rationalize why somebody did a terrible act or a really heinous crime. But somewhere along the line, we came to the place where you're not just doing that so that you can understand it better, but in some ways that the fact that you can rationalize it means that it somehow excuses it. And that's a ridiculous line to cross. We can't have a free, flourishing society if people take the law into their own hands in a violent way when they don't get their way. I'm here saying, talking about the prosecution of Penny, talking about the, you know, other prosecutions that we've seen. You know, I always think that, like, acts that are not intentional criminal wrongs shouldn't be in the criminal justice system. You know, these tragic things that happen that where nobody's really trying to hurt anyone else, but there's a terrible accident. And, we have a whole civil justice system that's for that, to assign fault when those sorts of things happen. And I don't like the idea of, you know, taking something that's not a criminal case and trying to force it into the criminal justice system. But at the same time, it's even worse to have a situation where people think that if they don't get their way, or if somebody is in an industry that they decide in their own minds is an evil industry, that you can, you know, take the law into your hands, be punitive with them in a violent way, and then rationalize afterwards that they had it coming. That's crazy. I mean, you can't have a society that way.
Yeah, not a civilized one for sure. Andy McCarthy speaking with us right now. We've had many conversations over the course of the months of time that Donald Trump has been trying to fend off some of what a lot of people refer to as lawfare. I think that the justice system on the whole, the conversation surrounding it has been very politicized. And Donald Trump coming in and naming people and nominating people into these positions where they can affect some change to level it out, it would be inappropriate for Donald Trump to swing the pendulum over to, you know, the Republican side of lawfare. I don't think any Americans want to see that. What have you thought about the announcements that he's made so far to his cabinet positions or to those areas where the justice system can get back to serving the business of the American people and law and order?
Well, I think well of the people that President-elect Trump has nominated to the Justice Department. And I like Kash Patel, who he's nominated for the FBI. I don't agree with him on all of his reform ideas. I have my own reform ideas that sort of aren't in the same place as his, but I think he was singularly right and did a great national service in basically exposing Russiagate for the sinister plot that it really was against Trump's presidency. And for that alone, I think he should come with a presumption in his favor. As far as the people at the Justice Department, I think Pam Bondi could be a fine attorney general. She's run one of the most consequential state attorney's offices in the country as Florida's attorney general. I do worry about people from outside the Justice Department, because the Justice Department, having been there for a very long time, is a kind of insular, almost arrogant place that is very conscious of its own ways of doing things. And if you don't know that place very well, as like Alberto Gonzalez found out when he was a state judge and attorney in Texas, and then was put in charge of the Justice Department under Bush, they can really undermine you if you don't know. It's a complicated building, main justice, and they're going to have a lot of smart, motivated people who are not friends of the Trump way of thinking and the Trump administration. And she's just going to have good people around her who know the building better than she does. And I'm a little bit concerned, even though I like these guys very much, that all of Trump's other major appointees at the Justice Department so far are lawyers who have represented him in his private capacity. The reason I worry about that is that if there's any case that comes up that Trump has an interest in, for whatever reason, and these are exactly the cases that he wants to, that he's concerned about, right? Because he's been through Russiagate back in 2016. He doesn't want to see that happen again. There's going to be arguments that those lawyers have to recuse themselves, because having represented Trump as a private lawyer in the past, they are not going to be able to be prosecutors in cases that affect him. So I'm a little bit concerned about that, but we'll just have to see how it plays out.
We're speaking with Andy McCarthy here on The Andy Frey Show. Check out his podcast, The McCarthy Report. I wanted to ask you about the news today that Letitia James, that New York attorney general, said she's not going to drop the civil fraud case against Trump, said that it's a civil case and that can continue going on while he is the president. Of course, President-elect Trump has urged, for the betterment of the country, for her to drop that case. What do you think about Letitia James's announcement today that it's going to continue on as is?
I think that what Letitia James ought to worry about is whether the appellate division, the appellate court that's reviewing that case, they may be the ones who dropped the case. They seem to be very disturbed by it during oral argument. I think at a minimum, what's going to happen when that appeal gets decided is that there's going to be a significant slashing of the penalty against Trump and the other defendants and the Trump organization in that case. But some of the judges, in asking questions to the state, were making noises about whether J- James had appropriately applied the fraud statute that she applied to this situation, because the fraud case against Trump was built on this terrible New York statute that really applies to consumer protection matters. And she applied it to a situation which is completely the antithesis of that. She applied it to a situation where you have transactions involving sophisticated financial actors on both sides of the transaction who obviously know to do their own due diligence about risk. So it's not a case that you need the attorney general to jump in and defend. You know, you really think that the state of New York knows how to approximate risk better than a big New York financial institution, which is in the business of pricing risk? It's ridiculous. So if I were James, I wouldn't be talking so tough. I'd be worried about what the court is going to do to the case, not what she's going to do to it.
Well, I before I let you go here, I noticed on X, you're at Andrew C. McCarthy, and your picture here shows you in a Mets jersey. And I just wondered if you think $765 million for Juan Soto is a crime from a St. Louis Cardinals fan here.
I have to say, one of the things about the Mets, it's funny you mentioned the Cardinals, because when the Mets were good in the 80s, which is the only time that they ever had like an overwhelmingly good team, every other time they were like the scrappy underdog kind of team. And they had a great rivalry with the Cardinals, of course, in the mid to late 80s. But what I worry about with Soto, and this is especially after this season that we just had, which is like, it fell out of the sky. You know, nobody expected them to be good. They were kind of lousy at the beginning of the year. And then all of a sudden, we're in the National League Championship, which no one expected. So it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And having rooted for the Mets now I'm a little older than the Mets are, so that's how long. I'm going to miss the scrappy underdog. You know, no one's going to feel like you're a scrappy underdog if you're paying guys $700 million.
The great pressure of high expectations. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Well, we here in St. Louis are feeling like we're in a rebuilding process, and watching Juan Soto go to the Mets, it was like, oh, man, that's a steep one.
That's a great organization. If they're down, they're never down. They're never down for like more than a year or two, and then they're right back. So
we're gonna try to apply the 2024 scrappy Mets philosophy next year, I think. We'll see how it goes.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, the scrappy is only cost you about $400 million, I think, now. So,
yeah, it's very economical. Andy McCarthy, thank you so much. Merry Christmas to you. We're grateful for your time that you spend with us always, and we hope you have a great holiday season.
Thanks so much, Annie. To you and yours as well.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Andy McCarthy, Mets fan. We won't hold it against him. And I refrained from saying pond scum right there. Did you see how well I handled that situation? Do the Mets, they know that. Mets fans know that we called him pond scum, right? That's obvious.
I think so. It was an insult as part of the rivalry.
It's the last time we ever interview Andy McCarthy. We're going to inform New York. It's not like New York's paying a lot of attention to what St. Louis is doing. I had to ask him that question there. Contributing editor at National Review and Fox News contributor. We got to get out of here, because when we come back, your senator, Eric Schmidt, and my adopted senator, Eric Schmidt, on the Annie Fry Show to talk about the Senate. What is the Senate going to look like with Donald Trump being the president? Is the Senate going to confirm Pete Hegseth, Kash Patel, this whole host of people that have to go through senatorial confirmations? Eric Schmidt will weigh in on that on the Annie Fry Show next.